Near the end of Luke chapter 12, what we're trying to do in the class on Wednesday nights is just look at various questions that Jesus asked and to look at what was transpiring around him asking that, and then obviously what kind of lessons we can learn from Jesus asking these questions. Luke chapter 12, verse 51, and we're going to come back and look at this more fully in just a minute, but what I want us to see is just verse 51, what Jesus asked there. Luke 12, verse 51, Jesus says, "Do you suppose that I came to give peace on earth?" What do you think would be the average person's answer to that question? Yes. Do you suppose that I came to bring peace on earth? Well, absolutely, of course you did. What does Jesus say in the next part of the verse? "I tell you, not at all, but rather division." Jesus asked the question, "Do you suppose that I came to bring to give peace on earth?" And he says, "No, not at all." Why would he say that he didn't come to bring peace? And why would he say that instead, rather is the word that he uses, rather he came to give division? Think about what the Bible tells us about Jesus and peace. Isaiah, in his prophecy about Jesus, how does he refer to him? The Prince of Peace. How can he be called the Prince of Peace and yet be saying he did not come to bring peace, but to bring division? We'll get there. Huh? Yeah, well, if you got an answer, just think about it. The Bible says that, or Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you." Well, if he didn't come to give peace, what kind of peace was he telling his disciples that he was going to give unto them? And if he didn't come to give peace, then how is it that we as Jesus' disciples can enjoy a peace that surpasses all understanding? He says, "I did not come to give peace, not at all. I came to give or bring division." The message that we preach is this, Acts chapter 10, Ephesians 6, that the gospel we preach is a gospel of peace. Well, our responsibility as Jesus' disciples is to go and preach peace, preach through Jesus Christ, that He is Lord of all. We are commanded in Romans chapter 12 and verse 18 to live peaceably as much as depends on us, to live peaceably with all men. We're told that the kingdom is a kingdom of peace. We're told to let the peace of God rule in our hearts. And yet Jesus says, "Do you suppose I came to bring peace? I tell you, not at all." Why does Jesus say that he did not come to bring peace if there's this much peace that is associated with him? And at the same time, why would he say, "No, not at all, but rather division"? Does that strike you as strange? All right, Nicole, you're about ready to bite your finger off because you're trying to hold it back. So, never mind. I'm going to call on Dirk first. All right, Dirk.
James 4:4 gives an answer.
Okay.
"Know ye not that friendship of the world is enmity with God?" He's talking about two different concepts. One is the world versus the fleshly world versus the spiritual world. And that's the connection there. That's what he's not bringing peace with the flesh.
Okay, that he was not to bring, he was not bringing peace to the flesh, that there was a division. Dirk read from James 4:4. There's a division between the world and Christianity, the world and the spiritual realm, and he was speaking in those terms. Nicole? Okay, well, that's what he goes on to talk about. In verse 51, Jesus says, "Do you suppose that I came to give peace on earth? I tell you, not at all, but rather division." And then he goes on and he talks about the fact that For from now on, five in one house will be divided. Three against two, two against three. Father will be divided against son, and son against father. Mother against daughter, and daughter against mother. Mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. And some of you are saying, yeah, you know, obviously, you know, between mother-in-law. I mean, that's just natural. What's he talking? Why would Jesus say that he came to give division? And then go on to say, it's going to happen. And that there's going to be division, just as Nicole said, because Jesus said it first, that there would be even division within a family over this. Kathy?
Because there's going to be no neutrality. It's going to be one side or the other.
Okay.
There's no sitting fence.
Okay. Kathy says because there's no neutral ground. There's no sitting on the fence. You're going to be on one side or you're going to be on the other. Richard? So he's talking to his disciples and trying to prepare them for what they are going to encounter and what's going to happen to them. Is it true that the message of Jesus Christ and him crucified, is it true that that message is divisive? Wow, I'm just overwhelmed by your response. Is it true that the message of Jesus Christ and him crucified is a divisive message?
Yes.
No. No. His message is okay, but it's the hearts of the people that divides.
Okay, so I'm getting yeses and nos. That the message is not divisive, it's the hearts of the people that divide. Say again?
Because you always ask loaded questions.
Well, of course it's a loaded question. I've got 35 minutes. It's got to be a loaded question. Look what happens. Take this word division, or as I've got it up here, divisive. Look at three times in the book of John. Three times book of John. John 7, John 9, John 10. Jesus, when the crowd heard the saying of Jesus, some of them said, "Truly this is a prophet." Good. I'm glad they said that. Others said, "This is the Christ." Good. Good statement. But some said, "Well, the Christ come out of Galilee. He's supposed to be coming out of Bethlehem, not out of Galilee." So there was a division among the people because of who? Because of him. What did Jesus do? There was a division. Some said, "Yeah, he's the Christ." Some said, "No, there's no way he's the Christ." John chapter 9, this is when Jesus healed the blind man. They brought the blind man, the man who was formerly blind, before the Pharisees. Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God. No way this man's from God." I'm talking about Jesus, because he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, "Hang on a second. How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. Why was there a division? Because they looked at Jesus, what he was saying, what he was doing. And some said, "No way, we're not going to accept him." And some were saying, "Hello, how can you not accept him?" John chapter 10. Therefore, there was a division again among the Jews because of what? The sayings of Jesus. The words of Jesus divided these people. Is the message of Jesus divisive?
To those that do not want to believe, yes.
To those who do not want to believe, yes. Well, they might say the same thing about you, Jerry. To those who want to believe, they're the divisive ones.
Well, I'm divided from those that don't want to believe, so that's...
You're divided from those who don't want to believe. When you hear the message of Christ, you have a choice to make. What are your choices? To the gospel of Christ, what are your choices? When you hear about Jesus dying on the cross and that his death, burial, and resurrection is the means by which you can have salvation and go to heaven, what are your choices? Accept it or not accept it. Believe it or not accept it. Believe it or not believe it. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18, message of the cross to those who don't believe, it's foolishness. Somebody dying on the cross supposed to save me, that's foolishness. But to those who do believe, It's the power of God. Same message, same event, two different results. The message of Christ and Him crucified can be divisive because the cross makes people make a choice. It challenges people to make a choice. Imagine being in a Jewish home. Was there division in a Jewish home where somebody would believe that Jesus is the Christ and another Jew would say, no way, this man from Nazareth can be the Christ? Would the prophecy of Jesus come true that here would be two against three in the same home? Yeah. Is that hard? Somebody would say that's not fair. Somebody would say, why would Jesus do that? Somebody would say, why would the Lord let that happen? Why would the Lord do something that would cause even people within their own home to be divided?
They got the same Bible.
Say again?
They have the same Bible.
They have the same Bible? Is Christianity and someone's view of the Bible or of God, is that the only thing that divides homes today? Are there other things that are divisive? Why are those things divisive? How many of you have a license plate on the front of your truck or a doormat in front of your front door, or where else have I seen these things? About a divided house. And on one side is a Seminole, and one side is a Gator, or on one side is a whatever, and another side is... How does that house survive? What? Why doesn't the man of the house say, look, we're all going to be fans, and I don't care what you believe. Why doesn't he just put his foot down? Because, did you say because he wants to survive? Good answer. Because he wants to survive. Why can he not make everybody in his house be the same kind of fan he is? The answer's obvious, isn't it? Everybody has the freedom of choice. It's true about what football team you're going to like. It's true about whether you're going to accept the message of Jesus or not. So is it that truth opposes error, or is it that error opposes truth? Yes. So if I preach the truth, am I being divisive because I'm preaching the truth? If I oppose truth, here's somebody preaching truth and I go and I oppose what they are preaching, am I being divisive? Say again? It's kind of like our Sunday morning class on understanding the Bible alike. So who's being divisive? The one who's preaching the truth or the one who's opposing the truth? Okay, well, then that person needs to stop preaching the truth. Because if he is really concerned about people, and if he thinks he has the true feelings and the true desires and the true needs of people in his heart, then he needs to be the one who backs up and backs off, because he's the one that's being divisive. That's what's wrong with America today. What's wrong? Darren? Darren's dad, what'd you say? What? Jesus didn't stop. Darren?
That was the whole part of becoming a kingdom.
Actually, like the word said.
Okay. How do you deal with that? When you have people in your own family, when you have people in your own family who don't believe the same thing that you believe. I won't repeat that for the ones who are listening to this CD later. Okay, that would be one option. I won't ask you to elaborate on that. We'll just... My way or the highway. What do we do here? I want us to think about this topic and recognize that for you to hold on to your faith is going to require conviction and courage, isn't it? For you to stand up for what you believe is going to require conviction and courage. Somebody who does not have the conviction and the courage to have the faith that you have is going to be the one who's trying to bring you down. He's going to be the one who's saying that, well, you're the divisive one, or you're the one who's causing the turmoil here because you believe what you believe about that. Let's think about this topic tonight as we look at this second point. First point is that the message of Christ, message of the cross, is divisive because people are going to accept it or not accept it. God has given them the free choice to choose whether they want to believe it or not. Division is inevitable because some people are obviously going to choose to believe it and some people are going to choose not to believe it. Look at the Bible to see that that's true. Two times in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 14, they come to the city of Iconium. Paul and his travelers on this first missionary journey, they come there, they encounter a great multitude who is obedient to the gospel, and yet there are some unbelieving Jews who have stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds. And so they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands, but the multitude of the city was divided. Part sided with the Jews and part with the apostles. Same thing that was happening in the lifetime of Jesus. Here it was still happening, not just because it was Jesus, but now here is the message of Jesus being preached. And the message of Jesus being preached is causing some to follow, a great multitude, in fact, to follow and to be obedient. And yet there were some who did not part with the apostles. They sided on the side of the Jews. Paul's on trial before the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 23. When Paul perceived that one part of the group there was Sadducees and the other part Pharisees, he said, "I am on trial because of the resurrection of the dead." If he saw there were Sadducees and Pharisees and he says, "I'm being judged today because of the resurrection of the dead." Why does that cause a problem? Because the Sadducees don't believe in the resurrection. So is it Paul's fault? Was it Paul's fault that there was a dissension that arose among the Pharisees and Sadducees and that the assembly was divided? Was it Paul's fault for preaching the truth about the resurrection of the dead? Was he being so mean-spirited and divisive because now these two groups couldn't see eye to eye because he brought up this subject? Y'all got quiet all of a sudden. Was he being divisive? Yes, he was. Here's what I want us to get tonight. Is there a difference? See, here's how. When you hear the word divisive, somebody uses the word divisive. Is it a positive word or negative word? If I had asked you that 15, 20 minutes ago, you would have said negative. Absolutely, you would have said negative. Because we hear the word divisive and we think, oh, okay, what's that person doing now? You know, he's splitting everybody up. You know, he's putting everybody into group. Man, that guy's... We hear the word divisive and we hear it and we use it negatively. Except Jesus caused division, and he said, "I came to give division." And Paul caused division, and when he saw two separate groups who were here, he made a statement, a factual statement, that he knew would cause division. Now back up a second. Is it wrong to be divisive? Is it wrong to be mean-spirited when we are being divisive? That's the difference. We hear the word divisive and we think mean-spirited. We just throw into the definition, well, if somebody's being divisive, they're being mean-spirited. Well, if I come in here and I say, "Who's a Gator fan? Who's a Seminole fan?" Yeah, you're the only brave one. You know, you better watch out. You're sitting in some Knoll country over there. Anyway, if I were to ask you, who's a Gator, who's a Knoll, who's a Tiger, who's a whatever. Sorry, Gary's sitting over here. So here I split you into groups. Am I being divisive? Who's a Gator fan? You raise your hand. Am I being divisive? Who's a Gators, get over here. Noles, get over here. And all of a sudden, I'm the one who would be divisive about it? Could I be blamed? Of course. You always blame the preacher. That's the easy part to do, right? Or is it because somebody's made a choice to be a certain kind of fan? And that puts them into a certain group. Think about this concept, that division is inevitable when people choose, and it's going to bring these conflicts that we've talked about. Is it going to bring these conflicts right into the very home that you live in? Yes, it does, and it has in many homes. But being a disciple of Christ, the reason it's so divisive is that when you choose to be a follower of Christ, it needs to be an all or nothing decision. Doesn't it? When you commit to follow the Lord, if you commit wholeheartedly, all or nothing, I'm going to serve Him with everything I've got. Is that going to tend to be divisive in your family? Is that going to tend to be divisive in your workplace? Is that going to tend to be divisive with your friends and people that you know? Why? Okay, because they don't want to make, and there's that word again, because they don't want to make the same choice that you do. And that's what it is. It's a choice. Will you be like the apostles? They brought their boats to the land, and it says they forsook all. They forsook all and followed Him. Here's Matthew. He left all and followed Him. Is that what God requires of us? Wholehearted, all or nothing, following Him. If I choose to do that, is that going to, in and of itself, divide me from others, separate me from others? Jesus says, if I'm somebody who's going to say, yeah, Lord, I'll follow You because that's what they did and that's what He did, but you know, I'm going to follow You, but first let me go and take care of this. Jesus says, if you've got a first before you've got a follow, then you're not fit for the kingdom of heaven. Richard?
Well, a couple of chapters earlier, he had sent out, that was divisive in himself.
Yeah. When Richard points out two occasions when Jesus sent out the 70, did He not warn them that they would come to places where they would not be accepted?
Yes.
What were they supposed to do? Were they supposed to try to compromise? Were they supposed to give in a little bit and water things down a little bit so that there would be some joint common ground to have? Shake the dust off your feet and you go your way. And then after that, Jesus says, if you're not with Me, you are against Me. And if you're against Me, if you're not with Me, you are scattering abroad. Pretty intense, but Jesus there is talking about the fact that these divisions would come. Nicole?
Well, it also tells us that we need to be holy and set apart.
Yep.
By itself means we're going to be
yes.
In our own pocket.
Yes, and I want to get to that in a minute. Nicole says that's what it means to be holy. That's what it means to be set apart. And if we are truly going to live a holy lifestyle, are we going to be set apart? Are we going to be divided from others? Here's an interesting thing to see, and we've kind of been alluding to it. What is it that brings about this division? There's two times. I want us to look at 1 Corinthians 3 and in the book of Jude. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul says, "Brethren, I could not speak to you as to spiritual people." Why? Why couldn't he speak to these Christians like they're spiritual people? He had to speak to them as to carnal. What's the word carnal mean? Fleshly, worldly. I couldn't talk to you like spiritual people. I had to talk to you like fleshly, worldly people. Was that a nice thing to say? I can't talk to you like you're a Christian. I got to talk to you like you're a worldly person. Why? I fed you with milk. Here you are. I've got to talk to you like your babes. I fed you with milk and not with solid food. For until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are not able to. For you are still carnal. You're still fleshly. You're still worldly. For where there are envy, strife, and divisions among you. Where do these divisions come from? Do they not come because you are carnal and behaving like mere men? Where do divisions come from? When the message of Christ is preached, why is the message of Christ divisive? Why does it divide people? Because there are some people who want to live carnally. There are some people who want to live worldly and fleshly. And what does the message of Christ tell them? They cannot do that. They are not to do that. And they will pay eternally for doing it. But they want to live carnally, fleshly, worldly. And they can make that choice, can they not? They can make that choice and go that way. Same thing being said in Jude verse 19, that these sensual or worldly persons are causing division because they don't have the Spirit of God. Where are these divisions coming from? Is it the Christian's fault? That there are divisions. Is it the Christian's fault that there is a division, a divisive appearance between followers of Jesus and followers of the world? If our spirit, if our attitude, if our behavior, if our words are proper, if we preach the message of Jesus, God Himself said that the message of Jesus to some is the power to save and to some is foolishness. Why is it foolishness to some? Because they want to live carnally, they want to live fleshly, they want to live worldly, and they don't care a thing about Jesus. They don't care a thing about the cross. They don't care a thing about the blood that He shed for them, because they want to do what they want to do. And God has given them that right. So, why do we have divisions? What brings about the divisions? One, it's the world behaving worldly. But at the same time, it's because of loyal Christians behaving like Christ. What would be the opposite of this statement right here? Give me the counter to a loyal Christian behaving like Christ. Unloyal Christians behaving like the world. If I'm an unloyal Christian behaving like the world, am I going to be divisive against the world? Oh, no, not against the world. Well, I'll be divisive against loyal Christians who are behaving like Christ. But if I am an unloyal Christian behaving like the world, am I going to fit in with the world? Sure. But if I am a loyal Christian to Christ, behaving like He did and behaving as He would have me to behave, is that kind of lifestyle going to be divisive? It better be. Now, is that negative? No. It's not negative. There are some things that are more important than peace, and I think that's where Jesus was going with His statement in Luke chapter 12. Did Jesus come to bring peace to earth, goodwill to men? Do you read that? Yes, you do. Did Jesus come so that we as followers of Christ could experience the peace of God that surpasses all understanding? Yeah. So what does He mean that I didn't come to bring peace, but I came to bring division? What does true peace bring about? We sometimes talk about world peace, and that used to be the Miss America or Miss whatever it was. You know what? What would you like to see? I would like to see world peace, and everybody thought that was great, whatever that meant. If we could bring peace to Iraq, if we could bring true, meaningful peace to Iraq, would that in and of itself be divisive? There would be people that by the very realization and the existence of that peace would want to disturb that peace. Would there be other nations in the Middle East who would not appreciate true peace coming to Iraq? And so just by the fact that peace has come into existence, there would be those who would be against it just because it was peace. We have a responsibility to recognize that while we want to be at peace with one another, and we're told as much as is possible, live peaceably with all men, while we want to experience the peace of God, that does not mean that we compromise in order that we might achieve that peace. Think about it this way. Decisions that we make in order that we might find peace with God are likely going to sacrifice peace with man. Could that happen in your home? Could it happen in your home that you make a decision, and the decision you make is going to bring you into peace with God, but is going to bring you out of peace with everybody else in your home and is going to sacrifice the peace that you could have in your home? Is it possible that could happen in your home? Jesus said it would. So, which one is more important? Why do people lean towards wanting to have more peace at home than having peace with God? Okay, they're stuck in the world's ways. What did you say, Freddie? For peace sake, right? They just want to have peace at home, don't you? I mean, you live out in the world, you have a rough day. Where do you want to go? You want to go home and have some peace and quiet, right? But if you're going home to a place where there's not peace and quiet, but because you've made a decision to have peace with God instead of peace at home, maybe I'll give this one up so that I can have an easier evening, an easier night, an easier Sunday. I'll just sacrifice this one in order to have this. It's a choice to make, isn't it? It's a decision that we have to come to. To use the words of Jesus from John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes unto the Father but by me." I want you to think about those three things that Jesus says. Think about them in relationship to us. There's some decisions that we've got to make. They're decisions that are going to put us in a point where we sacrifice peace we have with other people, but it will bring us into peace with God. First is, we've got to commit ourselves fully to the way. Jesus said, "I am the way." What else is called the way in the New Testament? You read the book of Acts. And there's something that is referred to as the way, sometimes even capitalized with a capital W. What is it? That Paul persecuted those who were of the way. The church, followers of Christ. Jesus says, I am the way. There were those in the book of Acts and in the New Testament who were of the way. If I want to be at peace with God, then I've got to commit myself fully to the way as a top priority and something that I will not compromise. Something that I recognize that there is only one way, there's only one rightness, and that's Christianity, and it is impossible for there to be any other way. Is that true? If there is the way, can there be another way? I'm not trying to trick you, Nicole, but I know you think I am. If there is the way, could there be another way? It's not the... There is a way that seems right to a man. June's quoting. Jesus in Matthew chapter 7 in verse 13 and 14 talks about the wide way and the narrow way. But if there is the way, the narrow way, would there be another way that would be just as good? Correct. Dirk, what were you going to say? Depends on where you're trying to get to. What about the truth? If I want to be at peace with God, do I need to commit myself fully to the truth? How many truths are there? Ye shall know a truth, any truth, some truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. If I want to be at peace with God, then I've got to commit myself fully to the way, to the truth, and recognition that it is an impossibility for there to be any other truth. And then this goes back to what Nicole was talking about, and that is that I've got to commit myself fully to the life. Remember, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, the life. How many ways of living are there that are acceptable to God? Just one. There is a lifestyle that God has designated and laid out in His Word that He describes as a holy life that's required by Him. Be ye holy as I am holy. In that same passage in 1 Peter chapter 1, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 16 is where God says, be holy as I am holy. I think back up, if you go back up to verse 13, is where God contrasts in this passage the former conduct and the holy conduct. Where we were before in our previous lifestyles and where we are now serving God in a holy life. And there's only one life that's acceptable to God. And there's not any other lifestyle separate and apart from the holy life described in Scripture that is acceptable to God. If I hold to the way, the truth, and the life, am I going to be divisive? Is my life, my conviction, my faith, is it going to be divisive? It absolutely will be. It will divide me from people who do not follow the way. It will divide me from people who do not hold to the truth. It will divide me from people who are not living the life. So what does that mean? Does that mean that I should ever be ashamed for holding to the way, the truth, and the life? Does that mean that I should ever allow others to make me feel ashamed? No. Because if there's only one way to please the Lord, and if there's only one way to be at peace with God, I've got to make up my mind. Do I want to be at peace with God, or do I want to be at peace with man? Now, can I be at peace with God and be at peace with some men? Yeah. If I'm at peace with God, what kind of men can I be at peace with? The other people that are at peace with God. Who would you rather be at peace with on this earth? Would you, of the people to choose from on this earth, would you rather be at peace with those who are at peace with God, or would you rather be at peace with those who are not at peace with God? That's not a hard question. That's an obvious thing where we ought to head. Here's the last thing I want us to see. When Jesus talked about, and I've got Matthew chapter 10 up here and Luke chapter 14, it's in those passages where Jesus uses the word hate. If any man comes unto me and does not hate his father or his mother, and some little kid says, cool, all right, I'm going to follow Jesus. Hate you, mom. Hate you, dad. I got permission. Is that what that's talking about? It means if I love anybody or anything more than God, I cannot be His disciple. If I love any person, if I love, same passage, same context in Luke 12 where we started. If I love any material possession, any physical necessity of life, if I love any family member or person more than I love God, I cannot be His disciple. But if I love God more than everyone and everything else, I'm going to be different. And that in and of itself will be divisive, but loyalty to Christ, that must take precedence. I cannot compromise. Paul himself said, I count all things that I used to have, that he describes in Philippians chapter 3, I count them all as loss in order that I might be a follower of Christ. And so persecution, difficulties, trials in life, they're going to come if I hold on to the truth. But folks, we don't ever need to shrink back because of that. We don't ever need to fold. We don't ever need to kind of hold ourselves back or retreat or run away or whatever synonym you want to use. We don't ever need to shrink back or be ashamed because we are holding to the way, the truth, and the life. Now, go back to what we said about the definition of being divisive. If I ever come across mean-spirited, arrogant, holier than thou, better than everybody else, if I ever come across with a spirit, with an attitude that is not of Christ, then I am being divisive in a way that is not pleasing to God. I need to allow the gospel to be that which divides me. I need to allow my holy lifestyle and my service to God to be that which naturally divides me from the world. When God says, be not conformed to this world, does that mean I need to be divided from the world? Does there need to be a line that divides me from the world so that I'm not even close to being conformed to this world? Yeah. There's got to be that division. But I don't ever need to be ashamed of it because good and evil are always going to be at odds, aren't they? I mean, they're always going to be at odds. And so if I feel like being good and righteous and serving God is putting me at odds with other people, who's it putting me at odds with? Well, I can swing over here and be among those who are evil and not be at odds with them anymore. But now who am I at odds with? God. Not the one I want to be at odds with. May God help us to always have the right kind of attitude when we approach this kind of a subject. But may He help us to be at peace with Him. But don't ever be ashamed that we stand up for truth and righteousness, and that's the way we live. Real quick, Carolina. Real quick. Yep. In 3 John verse 4, is that where you are, 3 John verse 4, where John says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in what? The truth. And may God be able to say that about us as well. All right, we got to go.